Thank you very much. This one is very okay. Thank you. Thank you, Farzana. Well, I'm supposed to speak about Indigenous peoples' campaigns on the protection of seeds and traditional knowledge, because as far as Indigenous peoples are concerned, you cannot separate the whole issue of seeds, protecting seeds, and also protecting the traditional knowledge or the culture that goes along with it. So I'd like to talk on that, but actually I diverted a little bit on what I'm supposed to be presenting. I'm not just going to speak about seeds, but I'm also going to link it with the global campaigns that Indigenous peoples have done and what are the challenges that come about because of these kinds of gains. So I'll just go through some facts on Indigenous peoples and then, of course, zero in a little bit on Indigenous peoples in the Philippines, and then I will discuss the right of culture and identity and also to lands, territories, and resources, which, of course, include seeds. And then what are the gains and challenges at the global arena? First, let me just show you where I come from. This is the Cordillera region in the Philippines, and I come from this region. I am Akankanaoy Igorot, and these are rice terraces, which we use wet rice agriculture and for thousands of years, and these are still productive up to now. So you can see the kind of terrain that we have and the way we have maintained our sustainable agricultural practices and our traditional livelihoods. I grew in this kind of community, and so I am very familiar with the issues, although, of course, I'm not doing a lot of that work now. Indigenous peoples in the world, as many of you will know, are about 370 million or even more, but we don't have the exact figures up to now, and we know that Indigenous peoples are the major contributors to agriculture, ecosystem, biological, and cultural diversity worldwide. 75% of the world's diverse cultures are found amongst Indigenous peoples. Like, even in languages, there are 6,000 languages in the world today. 4,000 of these are spoken by Indigenous people. So that's the kind of diversity that we have, and that's the contribution that we give to cultural diversity of this world. It's also known that 80% of the world's biodiversity is found in Indigenous people's territories, and these are in various ecosystems, whether these are the high mountains or the Arctic or the low-lying coastal areas or the forests, tropical forests, or arid and semi-arid lands. All of these ecosystems have various biodiversities which have been sustained and nurtured by Indigenous peoples through thousands of years. And it's also, by the UNEP report, it says that 65% of crop varieties consumed worldwide are produced in Indigenous peoples' territories. Majority of us, of course, live in rural areas, and we still practice a lot of our traditional sustainable livelihoods, whether this is shifting cultivation or rotational agriculture, pastoralism, hunting and gathering or trapping, as they call in the Americas, pastoralism and animal husbandry, agroforestry and high mountain agriculture, marine and coastal livelihoods. So these are the diverse ecosystems and traditional livelihoods that most of our people are engaged with, and these are the systems that are continuing to produce the diversity, not only in biological terms, but also in cultural terms. In the Philippines, where I come from, there are around 100 distinct Indigenous peoples in the whole country, and we have a population of 12 to 15% of the Philippine population, which is 85 million. So, I belong, as I said, to the Kankanaoy Igorot. And in the Philippines, we have been fighting as peoples. We have a very strong movement which started in the 60s, and it has developed to a very strong national movement, and that's the reason why in 1997 we had the government enact a law called the Indigenous People's Rights Act of 1997. And this law basically follows or is a clone of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which was recently adopted. Of course, our campaigns are basically have been revolving around assertion of our rights to our lands and territories and our resources, because these are the most coveted territories, because we have minerals, we have a large, very diverse crops and forests, and we also have a lot of, some of our communities also have gas. And so these are very strongly coveted by the government and by corporations, and that's why our struggles have been mainly around these areas. Of course, part of our campaign to save our seeds and the traditional knowledge related to this have really been accompanied by the campaigns for our assertion to our rights to our lands. And because of these campaigns, the law, the Indigenous Peoples' Rights Act, recognizes that we do have rights to our ancestral lands and ancestral domains. And in fact, there are now a lot of millions of hectares delineated as our ancestral lands. And each of these ancestral domains have also their ancestral domain sustainable development plans. In terms of other campaigns, we also work towards strengthening traditional livelihoods, because these livelihoods, like shifting agriculture or agroforestry, have been so much undermined by government because of the push for industrial agriculture. But these still are practiced until now. And the picture I showed you is one evidence that this practice is still very much vibrant. And we wish that, and we are still aspiring that this will be reinforced and strengthened further. We have a lot of, we are also asserting that customary laws and customary resource use should be respected by the government, because these are like our own ways of protecting our knowledge and our seeds. And we are, in the law, this is included, these are also protected. Of course, in practice, it's a totally different story, but at least in policy, it's recognized. We do a lot of in situ or field on-field conservation and also seed banking. And there's a lot of efforts done by indigenous peoples to develop further their seeds and to breed their own local seeds to be adapted to the changing situations, especially because of climate change. We have strong campaigns against biopiracy and also against genetically modified organisms. And in fact, we have several communities which have already declared themselves as GMO-free zones. We got local governments to enact laws that doesn't allow the planting of genetically modified organisms. And we do a lot of work in terms of capacity building for indigenous peoples, not only in the Philippines, but in other parts of the world, for the national implementation of the Convention on Biological Diversity. Now, I'd like to just move to the global arena, because this is a victory that we just gained recently, and it will have a strong bearing on how we are going to protect our seeds and our customary sustainable use of our own resources. So in 13 September of last year, the United Nations General Assembly finally adopted the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This is a declaration that we have worked for the past 20 years, and it took such a long time to negotiate it because, as you may understand, governments don't really want this kind of declaration to come into the picture. But because of the effective lobbying of indigenous peoples, not only at the national level but at the global level, we managed to get it through a vote. So last year, 144 countries voted for it. Only 4 countries voted against it, and these are USA, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. And so we got the declaration, and this is really a very big victory for indigenous peoples. This declaration has 24 preambular paragraphs and 46 articles, and I'd like to walk you through some of the few of the parts that says. This is a rally we held. This is a rally we held just before the adoption. We went on a demonstration in front of the U.S., Australia, Canada, and New Zealand to condemn them for not adopting the declaration. And this was the General Assembly when they voted on the declaration. So just to give you a flavor of that. Okay, so what is this declaration? First, it is, of course, a declaration that replies to all the pains and cries that indigenous peoples brought before the international community in terms of the issues of discrimination, colonization, and marginalization. And so preambular paragraph 6 says that indigenous peoples have suffered from historical injustices brought about by colonization in dispossession of lands and territories, and this has prevented them from exercising their right to development. No, paragraph 7 says that there is a need to recognize the urgent need to respect and promote the inherent rights of indigenous peoples, which derive from their political, economic, and social structures, from their cultures, spiritual traditions, histories, and philosophies, especially the rights to their lands, territories, and resources. So this is not a law that is new. It's just a law that recognizes how international human rights law will apply to indigenous peoples because of our specific historical circumstances. The Article 3, which is the foundational part of this whole declaration, is the article on our right to self-determination, which says that we have the right to self-determination. By virtue of this right, we determine our political status and we freely pursue our economic, social, and cultural development. And this is very important for us because if we decide that we would like to sustain our own economic systems, because we do have diverse economic systems, we don't have just one, we have many a diverse economic system depending on the ecosystems where we are found, and we would like to freely pursue our own work and development in those specific circumstances. Article 20 says that we have the right to maintain our economic and social systems and to be secure in the enjoyment of our own means of subsistence and development. And of course, our own means of subsistence is basically reliant on our relationship with our land, our relationship with nature in general. Unless that kind of relationship is recognized and respected and supported by governments and other actors, we will not be able to sustain this. No? And it says that we have to be allowed to engage freely in all our traditional and other economic activities. This one is the one that says that we have the right to maintain our distinct spiritual relationship with our lands, which we traditionally owned, occupied, or otherwise acquired. No, because there are lands where indigenous peoples have been displaced, but they acquired other lands, and so this has to be respected, and our right to uphold our responsibilities to future generations in this regard. This is also distinctly indigenous because as indigenous peoples, we feel that we owe our existence at present has to make sure that the 7 generations ahead of us are still able to enjoy the resources that has been bestowed on us. So that's the kind of philosophy that guides our work and our worldviews and our relationships with others and with the land. This is the article that describes our rights to our lands. And then, of course, there's an article which says that we have the right to redress when our lands, territories, and resources, including our seeds, are taken, confiscated, used, or damaged without our free, prior, and informed consent. And there are 5 articles in the declaration which says that we have the right to free, prior, and informed consent when we are displaced, when a mining company or any development project is brought to our lands, and when we are relocated, as well as when our resources are taken away from us. And then we have the right to maintain and control and develop and protect our cultural heritage, traditional knowledge, and traditional cultural expressions, the manifestations of our sciences, technologies, and cultures, including our human and genetic resources, medicines, knowledge of the properties of fauna, flora, oral traditions, and designs. And this is a very important article as far as the whole issue of seeds is concerned, because as we know, many of the biopiracy that's happening in the world today is taking place in indigenous people's lands, and therefore we fought very hard to have this. Having been involved in the whole process, I tell you this is the article that the U.S., for instance, Canada doesn't like, because they don't think that we should be given protection over our seeds and over our traditional knowledge over these seeds. No? The last article I'll quote is just, this is the article that states, that establishes the mechanism upon which this declaration can be implemented. And it says here that the permanent forum, states, and all other UN agencies and bodies should promote respect for and full application of the provisions of this declaration. No? And this is very important, again, because as you know, in the UN, if you have a convention or a declaration, usually there is nobody that monitors and ensures that it gets implemented. But we cover that ground. We campaign very strongly for a body within the United Nations called the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues that is now mandated to ensure its implementation and to monitor the governments in terms of how they are implementing it. So this was established in 2000. It's composed of 8 indigenous experts and 8 government experts, and I'm an indigenous expert from Asia, and for the past 4 years I have been chosen as the chair of this body. There is also a UN special rapporteur who studies the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous peoples, and of course the second decade of the world's indigenous peoples has been declared for 2005 to 2015. And one of the main objectives of the decade is to redefine development policies that depart from a vision of equity and that are culturally appropriate, including respect for cultural and linguistic diversity of indigenous peoples. So you can clearly see that the whole issue of culture is intrinsic in when we talk about development. Even when we talk about biological diversity, we cannot separate it at all from culture. In the picture that I showed you, whenever we have we plant rice, we do have a lot of rituals that go along with our planting of rice, harvesting of rice. And such rituals are intrinsically part of our agricultural practices. And we cannot think of having such kinds of practices without doing all the rituals that go along with it. So that's just one aspect of that kind of link. Finally, just to say, what are the challenges that we face? Of course, we have to really popularize and implement the declaration, because it's going to be a major tool that will be used to strengthen the fight for indigenous peoples, for seed sovereignty, for their right to self-determination, etc. Then we have to strengthen also the traditional livelihoods. Thirdly, the effective implementation of the Convention on Biological Diversity, Article 8J, which says that indigenous people's traditional knowledge should be protected and strengthened. And then we also would like to promote indigenous people's self-determined development, or development with identity and culture. And we are in the process of challenging the major agencies, the UN, the World Bank, the IADBs, if they are willing to support this concept of self-determined development, which includes all our campaigns to protect our knowledge and our resources. And this is just one diagram that shows how we are addressing the issue of indigenous development, where we have the traditional indigenous economies, and then we have the market economy at the other end, and we are working towards strengthening what we call the intercultural economy puts the balance. How do we relate with the market, and what aspects of the market are we willing to strengthen, because that will support our own vision of indigenous people's development. So this is just one aspect of the work that we are doing. And finally, we would like to increase our participation and visibility in other movements and global spaces, and we would like to strengthen the capacities of indigenous peoples to file legal cases against corporations and against governments. There are now a lot of cases filed before corporations, with whether these are seed corporations, pesticide corporations, or mining mineral corporations, all of the cases that are being filed now are using the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as a basis for these kinds of claims that indigenous peoples are doing. And I think this is going to be more and more, we will see more of these kinds of cases. And I think it's a good thing, because by filing all these cases, you are already reshaping the way governments are addressing the issues of indigenous people's rights and also their issues in relation to saving their seeds and saving their traditional knowledge that's related to the seed. So with that, I would like to just thank all of you who have come here, and I would also like to thank all of the donors and the friends who have supported the efforts that we have done to have the declaration adopted. And we look forward to using this as a tool to also strengthen our partnership with all the different actors in the world today. Thank you very much.